Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Holy shit, we've got another amazing fucking episode today. Our guest is one of my favorite comics on the planet, Brad's as well. People always talk about Chris Rock, Louis C.K., Bill Burr being at the top, and this guy is right there with him. He's incredibly clever, incredibly... His stage presence is unlike anybody you'll ever see in stand-up comedy. And his point of view has just gotten so locked in that there's only one of them. And that man is Sebastian Maniscalco. His new Showtime special, Aren't You Embarrassed, is coming out November 14th, 11 o'clock on Showtime. Please do me a favor and watch it and tweet at Sebastian and tell him that you love it. You're going to love it. He's just one of the best. I got to work with him in New York City over the summer and hang with him a little bit. And he was nice enough to come do the podcast. He doesn't do a lot of podcasts. I think he's done Mark Maron's and that's it. So we were very fortunate that he stopped by the ABLN podcast to chat with us. It was hilarious. He was in true form and we got great insight into his hairstylist father growing up. In Illinois, and his dad just never wanted him to embarrass him, and the Italian family, and working at the restaurant world before he got into stand up, and then he accosts my rec league basketball trophy and candle arrangement at the apartment. But Sebastian truly is one of the best. Please look up his stand up online. Go get his specials. What's Wrong with People is the name of his first special. And then, of course, this Friday, November 14th, 11 o'clock Showtime, Aren't You Embarrassed, the follow-up special for Sebastian Maniscalco. Follow Sebastian on Twitter at Sebastian Comedy and get all his tour dates at SebastianLive.com. And please check him out on the road whenever he's in your city. He's just one of the best. Follow Brad Williams on Twitter at Funny Brad. Of course, all his tour dates are at BradWilliamsComedy.com. Coming up, Brad. Where's Brad going to be? Well, November 20th. At the Black Oak Casino in Tululum, fucking whatever. Go to his website. It's at 8 o'clock. Brad's there at the Black Oak Casino. November 28th, 29th, and 30th, Brad Williams is headlining the Punchline in Sacramento, California. And I'm going to be there. I'm going to be featuring for Brad, popping in, working out some material before I get on the road for the Adam Devine tour. And of course, Brad will be at the Ontario Improv December 11th through the 13th, and I'll be there with him too. Ontario, California, December 11th through the 13th. Adam Ray, where's he going to be? Well, follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. And coming up, you can see me at the Hollywood Improv on November 19th at 10 o'clock, the Irvine Improv on November 18th, the night before at 10 o'clock, and the Ice House in Pasadena on November 20th. At 10 o'clock as well. And then, of course, I'll be at the Punchline with Brad November 28th, 29th, and 30th. And then I'll be headlining Joker's Comedy Club in Richland, Washington, December 4th, 5th, and 6th. And then coming home to do the Parlor Live, finally. It's been a few years, but I'm coming back to do the Parlor Live in Bellevue, Washington, after Christmas, December 26th and 27th. Tickets for all those dates on my website at AdamRayTV.com. And, of course, please go over to EstoyMerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y, Merchandise.com, about Last Night t-shirts and tank tops are up. Men and women, we've got them both. Please go over, pick one up, support the podcast, wear it to church, wear it to fucking bingo night, wear it to the potlucks, wear it to the comedy shows, and taunt other comedians with our merchandise. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, aboutlastnightpodcast.com to get all the episodes that you've missed. Download it on iTunes, subscribe, rate the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and comment on iTunes. Please, can't stress that enough. Comment on iTunes helps us climb the ladders and continues to give us some great rankings as we continue to give you guys content. Some great guests coming up: Pauly Shore, Melissa McCarthy, Rob Schneider, Jeff Garlin, Thomas Dale. Some really great episodes coming up. Brad and I are just having a ball, and you guys with your interactions on Twitter and your emails, can't thank you enough. Please continue to tweet at us at Funny Brad, at Adam Ray Comedy, hashtag ABLN Podcast, hashtag Clooney Boops, whatever fun hashtags we can come up with, and continue to enjoy the show. That's it. That's all the merchandise info. Those are the tour dates. Those are the Twitter handles. And now, ladies and gentlemen, sit back and enjoy a very special, hilarious episode of the About Last Night podcast with Sebastian Maniscalco.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and...
about last night.
Do you judge people who do fantasy football?
Absolutely.
What's wrong with fantasy football?
I mean, I'm a football fan, but even I know there's a problem with fantasy football.
Why did the judgment go on me all of a sudden?
Because you're in like 17 different leagues.
Well, yeah, because I have that much talent in fantasy football. You can't just isolate it to one league.
I'm just loving the judgment that's happening.
No, I'm just taking this in, trying to figure out, you know, what the mindset is here.
Well, okay. Yeah.
What's your first question when you meet somebody that's a avid fantasy footballer?
I have a lot of friends, close mm-hmm. friends, that are involved in fantasy football. Okay. So it's not like I'm foreign to it. I know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to be involved in multiple leagues and drafts,
right?
Is in my eyes, a little extensive. No?
I've had a lot of free time on my hands since I moved to San Francisco. A lot of free time.
Oh, you live in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Oh, well, now that changes everything. No. It's like, oh, well, now, okay, I get
it. No wonder he's doing it. But is it for you more the money,
no.
something to do, a hobby?
Hobby. I don't have hobbies. My hobby is stand-up comedy and... That's about it. So I just figure that's something, and it keeps something that me and my friends that live all across the country can kind of get together and do. Like, I know everyone in the leagues that I'm in. It's not like I'm in leagues where it's like, I'm beating up Tony from Poughkeepsie, and I don't know who the fuck Tony is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's more of a friend.
Yeah.
I get it.
It's just an excuse to talk. I mean, we can go back to judging Mr. Ray on his candles. I mean,
well,
that's fine.
You know what? When I first came in, the candles and whatnot, but the trophy bothered me.
Does it really?
Would you? Wow, embarrassments.
Listen. What are you? How old are you?
I mean, is that?
Well, it's relevant to the trophy being
for sure. I'm 32.
Okay, you're 32.
Yeah.
I figure, I mean, what, after...
Seven?
Seven, we stopped displaying the trophies?
After you stopped getting orange slices at halftime?
Well, as you notice, it's hidden behind the booze bottles. It's not like on the middle of the table where the candles are. Clearly, I want smell to take precedence over my achievements.
Absolutely, and I have to say, you do have a nice bottle of scotch.
Appreciate that.
It's a Glenlivet 18, and it's something special.
You want a little bit?
No, okay. I'm good.
I didn't know you'd get around by, would you call that a moped?
I call that a Vespa.
There you go.
Also known as a scooter.
Yeah, I feel like Vespa is what guys call it so they don't have to say the name scooter.
Yeah.
Well, you don't tell your wife you're going scooter shopping, do you?
My wife bought me the scooter.
She's cool as fuck.
Yeah. She got it for a Christmas gift 3 years ago. It's the best Christmas gift I've ever received.
No kidding. Why?
Well, we went to Italy, and I'm like, this is really nice. These guys look phenomenal. On the scooter. They just
they've
look
made,
cool.
They've made it look good.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it. Like, you even go to Hawaii, and you go on a scooter there, you feel like a dorky tourist. Mm-hmm. But they like scooter with style over there.
Scooter with style. Great way to put it. I mean,
they're slinging raviolis on the street to little kids who have ravioli stands. Like, thank you for the extra pasta shells. That's the worst Italian accent ever. Apparently it's the Afghanistan portion of Italy. So wait, so you're seeing it, and she's probably seeing your face light up.
Yeah, and I'm like, it'd be nice to have a scooter in Los Angeles, bounce around town, not have to worry about parking, in and out.
Traffic, all that.
So, yeah, I mean, I have a car. I keep it in the driveway. I'm actually thinking of selling it and just bouncing around on the scooter.
And just living on scooter life.
I'm telling you, scooter life in Los Angeles is a whole different vibe.
I'm not even, I 1,000% buy into that. Like, what are you seeing differently as being a scooter transporter now?
Well, number one, on the way here, normally if I would have drove here, another 10, 15 minutes because it's traffic right now.
Yeah.
But with the scooter, you zip right down the middle of the aisle, right up to the front of the
line. Did you used to judge those people?
All the time.
And now you're one of those guys.
Now I'm one of these guys. I might be in fantasy football next year.
Well, I mean, I don't think you've fallen that far since getting married.
It is a pretty sweet, I mean, even just you pulling up, like, I walked out and I was like, the fuck, is that Sebastian?
Yeah.
I had no idea. And then And then I see how nice it is, and then I see you with the nice helmet, and you take it off, and you look like you're in a fucking shampoo commercial.
Well, I have to tell you something about the helmet. I wish in Italy they don't have to wear a helmet.
Well, yeah.
They just wear sunglasses.
They fall into loaves of bread.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is just... Yeah, sunglasses. They're just... Because they don't fall.
They don't fall. And actually, in California... In Florida, you don't have to... Yeah, it's law. You don't have to wear it. In Florida... You just look ridiculous with a helmet on, and the one I got is extra large, so I look terrible. I don't look cool on this thing.
G.I. Joe who didn't make the cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got Snake Eyes and you got Scooter. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I can see that.
I did love, though, when we were trying to figure out, because I brought the pass out because I thought you'd be coming by car, and then you're like, well, someone's going to steal it. And I was like, well, I don't want that to happen. That pass means more to me than the trophy does, and the trophy means a lot, so you know how much the pass means. And then you're like, well, I could hop the curb. And then I joked about getting out my phone and taping the Aren't You Embarrassed, and you said that would actually be a good one. And that segues into me. What constitutes you seeing something for you taping it for your
If I would have pulled up on a scooter and I didn't know myself, I would have filmed it. Aren't you embarrassed?
Just being on a scooter?
Well, the helmet. If you saw the helmet on me, you'd say that.
Yeah. One of my favorite ones of those you've done was, I think just a few weeks ago, where you somebody was shaving in the airport.
Yeah, Starbucks.
In a Starbucks.
Shaving in a Starbucks in the airport.
With a Norelco. Do you use a Norelco?
Yeah, I use a Norelco.
Have you ever brought it out in public and decided this would be a nice time to shave?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think I did it one time in a bathroom at DFW airport, but I went to the stall like a gentleman. You know, I'm not out there with all the animals just like, I'm shaving, I'm a dude.
Never have I thought latte, beard trim. Like, I've never gone like thought to thought like that.
Yeah.
But
no. Well, anything that you would just stop in your tracks, that's an Aren't You Embarrassed. I mean, like, you would go, oh, I can't believe this guy's doing this.
Yeah.
Like today I was in Beverly Hills. I saw a guy wearing some backpack and it had like, it was like a cartoon backpack. The guy was 43 years old. That's going up on Instagram.
I love that you are able to identify those because we've all had those moments, and especially as traveling comics. I feel the airplane is the place where people – that's fucking crazy people now. Yeah. Like it used to be you wore a suit. It was a time. There was an expected behavior on a flight. Now it's the fucking Wild West up there.
Yeah, it's not good, man. It's really bad.
Well, I walk – oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Nah,
you're the guest.
Go ahead. Your show.
No, please.
Yeah, he's right. The airport is, and they have this passenger shaming website now where they're shaming people at the airport.
I love that. I love that.
But mine's more broad.
Yeah,
you could go to Starbucks, you could go wherever and catch this shit. But at the airport, it's reached an all time high.
You almost have to probably stop yourself from just using all your memory on your phone.
Yeah,
from just capturing everyone's.
I don't know, man. Like you were saying, it was a time where you went to the airport and you dressed up. You looked like a traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a slumber party.
You know, I walked on the plane in New York when I was opening for you at Gotham over, was it July, I think? And we ended up being on the same flight at like 7 a.m. And I walk by, and Sebastian's in first class, and I walk by, and I look at him, and I have my shades on. Because early morning, I wear sunglasses, because my eyes are just tired. And it's just, I did it once, and it felt great. Also, I didn't like from first class, like the assessment that they give you of the people walking by. I didn't like locking eyes with people. And then I got to coach. I didn't like locking eyes with people as I was, whatever. I wear the sunglasses almost like I was hiding behind them. And I walk by, and I look at you, and I go, hey, you Sebastian? Oh, big fan. And then you just kind of looked at me and you go, a little bright in here for you? You go, you're the guy with the shades on the plane?
Well, that's what I was saying. It's the first thing that hit me. As soon as he walked on a plane, in my head, I go, here we go. We got one of these. And it's you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. By the way, the first class was a bump up. That was a bump up upgrade that wasn't a pay for.
You know what, though? Mm-hmm. Okay. You deserve that at this point.
Hey, you know what? I don't know how you guys feel about first class.
If I can do it, I do it.
Yeah. It's not really first class, though.
You're
this right. This is not.
Well, because you hear stories about like Pan Am, like what like when, yeah. like first class when it was Pan Am Airlines, and it was like these women, these beautiful women in like first class meals and just crazy first class amenities. Now it's like, all right, you got 6 inches more of leg room
and hamburger helper.
Yeah,
they're like, but we kept it in like the microwave like a couple extra minutes longer, so it's really warm.
Yeah. Do you want the Stouffer's lasagna or the Hungry Man XXL?
Yeah. It's not good.
So in Arlington Heights, where you grew up, Illinois, how much of this, aren't you embarrassed? Your point of view right now, how much of that was in you when you were a youngster?
That was influenced with my family upbringings, particularly my father, my mother. Talk about, like, you know, dressing up. I used to come down to go to church, and my mother would go, "Hey, not in those pants." So, you know,
going to meet God, son.
Going to meet God. Let's get presentable.
Yeah.
So all that. My father was a hairstylist, still is. So I grew up with some sense of like putting yourself together. I borrowed my father's clothes when I was a kid.
Nice.
So I had always a sense of like presentation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he always used to say, "Don't embarrass me." You know, every time you used to go somewhere, "Don't embarrass me." All right.
Holy shit.
So
I love that. Don't embarrass yourself. Don't embarrass the family. No, me.
No, yeah. The father.
Yeah. Because is a reflection on me.
Yeah.
But what about you at that age was already giving, like, you must have done something to, or no, he just was.
It was his idea of how to be a father. You know, other people, you know, fathers teach him how to throw the football, how to shave. My father was just, "Don't embarrass me." Because, you know, like when I would cry as a kid, we'd leave the restaurant. There was no like.
My dad did that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
I would start crying and he was just like, "Well, you're not eating." And then we would get up and go and I would not eat that night.
Whoa.
And that taught me from a very young age. At like age four, I'm like, "All right, I don't care if I accidentally put a whole glop of wasabi in my mouth. Don't cry."
Yeah.
Like that was
the thing. Would do the same thing?
Well, I was a kid. I would start crying, whining. To go. Let's do it. Let's go.
See, my dad made it easy. He just left when I was seven and just didn't come back. And I was like, all right, so I guess this
no father.
Well, see, Adam, you cried.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that was the problem.
I'm over it, though, now. I got that trophy. Thanks a lot, Dad.
Like, if your dad was around, he would have told you that after 32, no trophy.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. Probably. Probably.
Well, did you grow up with a father figure in the house?
Well, I mean, it was they split when I was like eight, and then, you know, around every other weekend, and then moved away with his new family, and then summers, like, you know, do dad summers, and then became more around once I got to college, because then it was like, you know, you put your animosity aside, and you're like, well, I'd rather have a pops and not have one at all. You
yeah.
know? Thanks for coming by, Sebastian.
Yeah, no, it got real somber.
Yeah, he can go cry in the corner for a bit.
I was just wondering.
Hold on to his trophy. I'm like,
yeah. He actually gave me that before he left. I lied about the basketball thing.
I did this for you, Dad.
Yeah. And by the way, that guy who was shaving in the coffee bean, that's one thing my dad taught me too before he left. And so I reserved my judgment on that guy. What were you going to say?
No, it was interesting because I was just noticing how you became very like, I don't know if I want to talk about this.
Yeah.
So my question, being comedians here,
for sure.
Do you guys talk about personal things, family, maybe like this thing, your father leaving at seven? Is this topic for comedy or is this certain things we don't get into? I'm asking you in particular. I mean, a lot of comedians are an open book. I like to be a little bit private.
Yeah.
But is there a...
Well, I like that you're asking because I know that you've said this many times that you, you know, you look up to both Brad and I, and so I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, because this is a big moment for me.
But no, shit, man, it's so funny that I've probably talked more about that stuff on podcast because... When I first started, I talked about it a lot because everyone was like, talk about what you know and like be honest and like you want to get a sense. When I didn't have a point of view, they're like, well, help shape that by talking about the real shit. So I would do it. And I don't think I've talked about it, I mean, in probably done any jokes about that deep of family stuff in probably, you know, the last I did the first two of the now almost 8 years I've been doing it. So I haven't done it in probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And A, because it doesn't interest me, and B, I think I just the more I started, you know, actually have a point of view about shit that was a little bit brighter, yeah. And I wanted to go down that path.
Yeah,
but I mean, what do you think? You think we? I mean, it should be.
I don't know.
You like to keep it private.
What do you think?
Me personally, I like to have a part of my life that is private that I do not talk about stage. But there definitely is that voice in my head that when something fucked up happens, goes, "All right, where are the jokes here? Mm. How can I make this funny? How can I bring it to the stage?" And yeah, there are those moments when I'm kind of going back and forth with, should I talk about this? Should I not? And I'll try it. And if it's funny, then that sort of trumps almost anything that I think.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, that's funny. That works. All right, I got to talk about this.
Well, I guess from my point of view, I'm coming from a family that, you know, might say, why are you talking about that? Like, that's something that we maybe shared as a family. It's something that's like, you know, because I'm coming from an Italian family, very secretive, you know.
Sure.
Oh, is it really?
We don't air our laundry out. Mm-hmm. My parents got divorced. I couldn't say anything for 4 years.
Oh, shit.
You know, people ask, well, hey, we're still together. So I'm like, okay. So, you know, I've always often wrestled with, you know, how much do you share of your personal life on stage, on these podcasts, you know. I typically don't do a lot of podcasts, and
we appreciate it, by the way.
No, I'm not saying that because you guys are special to have me. By the way, the pumpkin candles bother me.
It's now gotten to that point. You know, it's like, I don't know, my mom and dad, when they split up, they had an argument over pumpkin candle. I'm confused now. It's bringing it all back
to this
point. My dad
left the candles in my bedroom when he left. It's, everything has a symbol, man. Can you just fucking back off of the symbolism?
My bad.
But you do talk about your family. And in your latest special that's getting ready to come out, mm-hmm. November 14th, called...
Aren't You Embarrassed?
Yeah,
perfect.
Showtime. Yeah, 11 o'clock. Yeah, so that does talk a lot about, you know, my father and growing up in this immigrant family.
How do they feel about it? Have they seen... They were at the...
Yeah, they were there.
Chicago,
they
right?
came to the taping. My father is very, very involved in my career as far as, like, he's very opinionated. He's often giving me suggestions. He's... What are you reading? What is that?
Oh.
What's on your screen here?
Notes about you, my friend.
Oh, nice.
We have a map every now and then.
Nice. Prepared.
I'm prepared.
Yeah, for your listeners out there, I don't know if mm-hmm. you guys know what these two gentlemen do. But they have a preparation sheet in their computer. It's just kind of notes on, you know, I saw Arlington Heights in there.
Sure.
It's really nice.
I got 12 questions about your hair.
Well, he's the hair guy.
Yeah. Well, Adam inspired those, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, you just kind of want to be able to talk about whatever comes up.
Yeah.
But back to your family.
Back to my hair. What would your dad, what would your dad say about my hair, by the way?
Very full. You know, I don't see any type of receding going on at all.
No, that's the one thing. Trust me, man. I take pride in that. I've got friends who went bald at, like, 23 and... I just like, that's why my hair was long for so long, because I think I was compensating. I was like, just don't cut it.
Because
I don't even want it to be short, just to know what it might look like with less.
Yeah, we had a discussion about your hair when we worked together.
We did.
I go, do you dye it? Or is that real?
Yeah. Because you were so in awe.
I was fascinated.
I think you got off stage after a standing ovation, looked right at me and go, what do you do to that?
That's what I said. I said, how you get it so thick? Is that a niacin you're using?
You got a standing ovation. Your first thought is Adam Ray's hair.
His hair is great.
I was glistening in the back. It was kind of distracting, if I can be honest. I think that people might have seen the hair, seen him look at me. They started clapping for my hair. Then they're like, oh, it's also the end of the show, so let's stay standing. All right, so your dad, what type of suggestions does he...
Well, you know, he knows my act back and forth, and after I get on stage, he'll come in like a coach in the green room with a piece of paper.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, the subway bit, you left out the part about running through the garden. That's one of my favorites. It's, you know, it kills every time, and you skipped it. So, yeah, he's very involved. And it got to a point where I had to tell my dad, can you just come to the show as a fan? Just laugh, enjoy it, rather than being a father.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he's got a lot of expectations, and he's always has of me, which is great. Because it pushes me, because he's got clients. He's a hairdresser. You got clients coming to my show every time I come to Chicago. He's like, you got new material, right? These people pay $30 a ticket. They want to see the same show. So he pushes me.
Yeah, that's a whole added pressure.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing.
Now the way you describe him, it seems he's taken an enormous amount of pride in you. Are you an only child, or does he just hate the other kids?
No. I have a sister, and
okay,
he's always been more passionate about things that I've been doing. Not that my sister doesn't interest him. My sister's an editor, but my father was a soccer player growing up in Cefalù, Sicily. So he took a liking to when I started to play soccer in school. By the way, I had a beautiful mullet.
Oh my God!
Where's that trading card?
Where is, please really? Do you have a 1979 Sebastian Maniscalco with the full mullet? Yeah. Tops.
No, I got Don Russ.
Don
Russ. Yeah. So, and then when I
were you
started,
good?
What's that?
Were you good?
All conference senior year.
Hello.
Had a bit of a
really?
Problem.
Where's the trophy?
Well, a ribbon. So he's always been there with the soccer, and now with this entertainment business, he's really kind of he's involved.
Mm-hmm. Is that how much of that from the get go is encouraging, or are you like, man, this is my thing? You don't know what you're talking about. Let me.
Yeah, some of that you run into, like, listen, Dad, just let me do this, and he's backed off in the recent years. I think he's just becoming more of like, hey, listen, let me just enjoy my son's shows rather than go there and. But he does know comedy. He's very funny. He's very funny.
Funniest person you know? People say that about their family sometimes.
Not the funniest person I know, but very, very much a character. Very much, you know, the guy's a guy came here when he was 15 years old, and he's still trying to figure things out. Like, he recently got in contact with his friends that he had in Cefalù when he left. So he left when he was 15 years old.
Holy oh, my crap. God.
Me and him went back 3 years ago for the first time. So he spent 50 years away, went back for the first time with his son. I've never been there. We go together. We're walking around Cefalù. He's showing me, this is where I used to play ping pong. This is where I used to play foosball. Now, these are all things that he taught me.
Was this at a Dave and Buster's? Or was just
Cefalù style. <Yeah. laughs>
The first one.
So he's showing all this stuff to me, and I'm like, this is, you know, and I got emotional. I had to take a knee during the tour, and he goes, what's the problem? I go, none of this is hitting you?
Yeah.
First time back to Cefalù with
incredible.
Your son, nothing. And, you know, he was in awe that he was there. So anyway, it was a special moment
that's
that
incredible.
Me and my father shared. And we're best of friends. I just talked to him before I came over here. Not on the scooter, but in the house.
You don't drive and scoot?
Or no,
Texans?
No.
Did he have any advice for you on this podcast?
He didn't know what a podcast was.
Okay.
Surprised.
Yeah.
Wait, so when he, what friends did he reunite with when you guys went back?
The guys he used to hang out with when he was 15 years old.
What was that like watching them?
Oh, this is... He recently went back again and reunited with these guys. When we went together, we didn't really see anybody.
Okay.
We
so just it's just a father-son moment.
Just a father-son moment.
Yeah.
And then when he went back recently, he connected with his buddies.
What did he? I mean, that first phone call when you talked to him after he did that.
Oh, he's like, he wants to go back in February.
Oh, my God.
Have a reunion.
No shit.
He's 68 years old. He goes, I got to get back there. he didn't go for 50 years. Now he wants to go once a month.
That was like now it's going to be his routine.
That's his, and he's a little upset that he used to have a three flat there. Or his family used to have a three flat there, a farm, a barber shop. They let it all go, and now he's got nothing. You know, so he's racking himself in the brain, and like, you know, I wish I would have hung on to that.
And you're like, Dad, but then I don't exist. So you kind of got to weigh the good with the bad here.
Well, his parents were going to give it to him.
Oh, okay.
And his brother. But at the time, my dad was worried. He's like, I don't want to deal with like property back in Cefalù, Sicily.
I want to go to Chicago and cut hair.
Yeah.
Are there many aren't you embarrassed opportunities in Cefalù, Sicily?
None. We behave like you're supposed to behave.
You know what, though? You say that as a joke, but at the same time, I believe that.
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding. I had no problem with the people there. The people know how to live. They sit down. They behave. Everything's very well-mannered. And you get back to the States, man, it's a whole different animal.
Do you have a genuine distaste for people or just a genuine like curiosity about why we are the way we are?
I have a curiosity of why people don't have basic skill sets and basic manners to kind of get them through the day. That's
right.
I'm in kind of disbelief.
Yeah.
I'm not saying what everything that I do is not is right.
It's perfect, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, believe me, do my own, aren't you embarrassed of myself?
Yeah.
I mean, some of the stuff I do on stage, I there's a joke I do about eating a muffin out of a bag. And then when I see that, I'm like, take it out of the bag, but I do it.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just, yeah, I don't know if I hate, I don't, hate is a strong word. I'm just disappointed in people's
Which is
behavior.
Stronger than hate.
Yeah.
But that, but you've seen people's manners just, through, I mean, I feel that as a comic, we see people when they're going out and, like, they're even trying to impress other people, and they're still acting like jackasses.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing to me. Like, they're going out with their group, and they still fuck up. You're like, yeah. What possessed – like, you should be on – you're on a first date, asshole. Like, this should be your best self. I don't know what it is.
I don't either. I don't either, especially on a first date.
Yeah.
You want to – I don't know. Are you married?
No.
Are you dating?
Yeah.
Okay, and so what's the dating vibe for you? Is are you finding when you take a girl out? I mean, I don't know. I've been out of the scene for a while with this technology and mm-hmm. whatnot. What are you finding out there? Are both of you guys single?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm almost finding that, and it's kind of refreshing, but kind of weird. Like when I take out my wallet,
Anal is first base now.
Well, sure.
So that's what Brad. Really, so that's what he's finding, and it's,
yeah.
Again, it is weird. But.
Yeah. But like I'm finding out that when I pull out my wallet to pay on a first date, the woman will sometimes get offended.
Oh, really?
And yeah. Just be like, "What do you think? I don't have money? What do you think? I don't have this?" And it's almost like I'm insulting her by taking out my wallet to pay. And I'm like, I'm just trying to be a gentleman. I'm just trying to be a man that my father would be proud of. I don't get this animosity towards me right now.
I don't get that. I don't know why a woman would feel threatened or. Because a guy's going to pay what, for dinner? I mean, that's kind of
yeah.
like...
It's yeah. like you had a salad and a Diet Coke. It's not like I'm going hungry for 3 days.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, good to know the Olive Garden is where you take them to the first date. That's probably...
OG, solid first date.
What was the restaurant you worked at when you first came out here?
I worked at a hotel?
I
worked at the Four Seasons
that's
Hotel
right.
On Doheny and 3rd.
And that was your... Right when you got out here.
Right when I got out here. It took me 6 weeks to find a job. I kind of grew up in the restaurant business, waiting tables and whatnot. So I figured when I came out here, I'd saved $10,000 for a year. I remember I graduated Northern Illinois University, and I went into temp work.
Oh, shit.
Was temping at United Airlines Employees Credit Union with a 4-year degree.
Wow.
Hey, man.
Data entry.
Dad's proud of that.
How many comics have come from that background? Holy shit.
So I was working there during the day, and at night I would work at the place called The Living Room in Schaumburg, which was a very, very hot restaurant / nightclub, and I saved $10,000.
Dude, so you were around, you were dealing with people so much from the get-go.
Yeah.
So I think always, that has yeah. contributed to your heightened awareness of the things that... just seeing behaviors on a daily basis.
Yes,
sure. And also, you've worked. Now that you say that you're in the Four Seasons, you're in a hot nightclub. These are two areas where there's some expectation of class. Yet, I have a feeling that people would always come in and shatter that expectation.
Oh, you are dead on with that.
Yeah.
Especially at the Four Seasons, Beverly Hills. Oh. It's, you know, this is a nice joint. I mean, you know, the level of service and standards that we're held to.
Mm-hmm.
I wish the customers were held to.
Oh, God.
So you would get people coming in there, and it was very celebrity driven.
Yeah.
There was a lot of celebrities at that time coming there and having, you know, a beer or whatnot. And then you would get these people that would sit down for 8 hours, have a hot tea, and wait to see, you know, who was going to walk in.
Oh, and so they're just like lobby watchers.
Prime real
and stuff.
Estate.
Yeah.
And who would walk in? Go ahead and name drop a little bit.
Sean Penn was a big guest there. De Niro used to come in every
Jesus.
Once in a while. Shaq, great tipper. So I was there for 8 years. So I saw a lot of...
Sigourney Weaver? Come on, dude. Don't hold on to the Weaver stories.
Sigourney Weaver. Something about that woman.
She's really into trophies, I hear.
We're
right?
hoping.
Trying to get her on the podcast.
Fingers crossed.
Wait, so at the temp job, though, what types of daily occurrences...
are making you go, I got to get the fuck out of this?
Well, I was in a back room. This was like basically a bank, but it was a credit union. And my job was to, you know, when you go to the bank and deposit a check, and they ring it through like this check reader, and you would have to type in the amount of check, and then it would like print it on the bottom right hand. So that's all I did all day long.
Wow.
Zing, zing.
So, head in your hands. Yeah. Perfect.
And it was awful. It was just the reason I didn't get a job out of college. Yeah. I graduated with a corporate organizational communications degree.
What is that?
I have
he
no
just
clue.
Made that up. That's yeah. not no a real clue. Thing.
Yeah. It was just a degree.
Could just majored in unicorns at that point. Yeah. Means about the same thing.
I couldn't get into any school. I thought I was going to be an accountant. Forget that. Journalism failed at that test to get into the journalism school. Mm-hmm. So I got into communications. Now, career day, you know, where you go in and they have bring a bunch of companies in.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, I walk in and I have my silver wedding suit on.
Nice.
With like a... with a handkerchief.
Handing out fucking 1979 soccer trading cards.
Leather resumes.
Yeah.
Leather resumes.
Oh, my God.
So I didn't.
Got the matching pocket square and everything.
Yeah, the whole thing. And I didn't fit like that corporate. You were supposed to have like a blue suit.
Right.
You know, very neutral. Mm-hmm. You know, I walked in like Pesci from Goodfellas.
Just handing out $100 bills. It's like, that's fucking Monopoly money. Don't care. Don't worry about it.
So, you know, needless to say, no interviews. So I came home. I go, listen, I got to get a job. Started working at this temp agency, which I worked at for 6 years prior just for extra work.
Yeah.
And then decided, you know what, I'm going to come out to Los Angeles and give the stand-up comedy thing a try. Always knew I was going to be a comedian, just didn't know how, when it was
going to
happen.
Oh, for real? Yeah. So even going to career day, you're like, this is just a stepping stone. Like, I'm just trying to make a little money.
For me, it was, there was no passion in it. And I didn't know at the time I was going to move out to Los Angeles. It was always in the back of my head. I wanted to quit college when I was freshman year and move out to Los Angeles. But my father was like, listen, just get a degree. Stay in school.
Right.
And best advice I've ever had, because I met great friends and, you know, really learned a lot. So if I would have came out here when I was 18, 19, I wasn't prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I feel like college is such a – people who have bypassed it for – and even hearing people who, when I've told them I went to SC for theater school, and they're like, why don't you just come out here and start trying to get in films or take classes? And that, like, why'd you have to go to school for it? I was like, well, A, the program was great, but B, like, man, there's so much just living and experiencing and growing up that I did in college that,
yeah, because do you really want to run into a powerful Hollywood figure when you're an 18, 19-year-old punk kid? Or do you want a little life under your...
You want a little life.
Tell that to Cybill Shepherd or Ashton Kutcher, who both fucking struck gold as soon as they got out here. They were shaving in a coffee bean. Both of them were. And that guy was like, that woman has the beard of a TV star.
Fucking perfect.
Just kidding, Cybill, by the way. Really want you on the podcast.
Obviously.
But yeah, like, I mean, what in college do you feel like really you took with you to when you came out here?
Well, it gives you structure.
Yeah.
It was the first time I've ever lived on my own, although I had roommates in college. It was the first time I'm, you know, coming from a small suburb in Illinois and now thrust into roommates and guys and girls and the whole thing. And it was like, all right. So it was life.
Yeah.
And you're on your own. So I think it taught me to have responsibility. It taught me, you know, how to deal with people. I was in a fraternity.
Me too.
I became the president of the damn thing.
Oh, shit.
There you
just
go.
Because nobody wanted to do it. And I just kind of stepped in.
And you were wearing a three-piece suit at every meeting.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. What were pants pressed and everything. You're ready to go, buddy.
What sort of things would you those meetings were so ridiculous. I'm sure we can share similar stories.
What, the chapter meetings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how you're going to deciding to let a guy in, right?
Oh, rush?
Yeah.
Yeah, all that.
Where people, like for us, we'd have a big party at some club or we'd do an event with girls or even guys would take us to a Laker game or something. And then afterwards, everybody would get in the room and they go, all right,
Alex Moshkowitz was a Jewish frat, and people would just raise their hands and take turns saying, they'd be like, Alex, great dude, had a lot of heart, knows a lot of hot chicks, which is a huge plus. He knows a lot of hot chicks with sweet tits, and we all love tits, so that's a big plus. I went to, actually, one of my buddies went to high school with him, said he was a cool fucking dude back then, and I really think he'd be a big asset to the frat. Then a guy right after would go, I talked to Alex for about 25 minutes, and dude was a total fucking chode, dude. Fucking didn't talk to any chicks the whole night, was fucking grubbing hard on the fucking mini hot dogs. I kept going back for more mini hot – dude, I never got one mini hot dog because this motherfucker was there the whole time. So it seems a little greedy on his end to take all the mini hot dogs. I don't think we should let him in. And, like, it would just go back and forth all night like that.
Yeah, it's that's funny that – the whole thing was about chicks.
Yeah, yeah.
There was nothing like, hey, his GPA is 3.8. He's really going to bring some, you know, quality education.
He might want to be president when Sebastian leaves, because he can have some way to step up.
It's just like, well, this guy can really do a beer bong good.
Yeah, and that then was get like all the prerequisite.
Yeah, get all the chicks in here. It's solid.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's incredible.
I know our fraternity, I would go down to chapter meeting and go, this is how screwed up our fraternity was. Be like, listen, guys. We got $3,000 in the account. There's been a motion to put a computer room in, or to have 3 more after hours. And it was after hours. That's
always. Sure.
Always.
Yeah, sure.
No computer room, nothing. Phi Sigs, who were down the street, were like the smart preppy fraternity, and we were like the guys who just partied and just did our hair. We had a lot of Greeks and Italians in our fraternity. A lot of good hair.
The women, I mean, good parties?
Great. Best parties on campus. Anybody that went to NIU between the years of 1992 to 1996, we had a great DJ. His name was Johnny O. Johnny Orodnik. And best music, and we were the actual fraternity. When you came to our parties, we were dancing. We had like routines and whatnot.
You like show up and you'd be like the Phi Sig boy band right there.
Yeah,
oh my god,
the girls were like, I can't believe it. These guys are amazing.
Greeks and Italians coming together for one dynamic unified concert.
The girls are like, hey, you know, we have tits and we're down here. You can dance with us. Hold on, I got to do my move right here.
It's a big part coming up.
All right, so then did you just stand up in college at all?
I did once. God, what was the guy's name? You know how, like, you guys do colleges.
Of course,
the national headliner that comes in and whatnot. Well, I opened up for the comedian that was coming to the school at the time.
Yeah.
And awful. It was an awful experience for me. It was a contest. I won the contest.
I was going
to
ask,
open up for the guy. 10 minutes I did. And it was a primarily black audience.
Perfect.
And they were screaming Sandman.
Oh, for like the Apollo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't know what that meant.
Right.
I just hear, Sandman! Sorry?
And you're sitting there like, I think the black guys have given me a nickname. This is great. I'm going to walk around campus and they're just going to be hollering at me, yo, Sandman, that's Sandman over there, motherfucker. And you'd be like,
that's my own N-word. Wait, so what did that? All right, so it was terrible.
It was bad. It was bad. And then, but it's funny. Now, fast forward 2013 or 2012, I'm doing Cleveland Hilarities, and the guy I opened up for is the featured act.
Get out.
Hey.
This was like really, I'm like, wow, look at how far, you know, from that moment,
right,
just getting basically booed off stage. Mm-hmm. And nothing against the guy that came in, but it was just one of those things.
And look at how far he's fallen.
Did you scream Sandman at him when he was on stage?
Sandman! How's it feel?
That's incredible.
So, it was just a moment. I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. But
did the guy recognize you at all?
It's like, I knew who he was.
Right.
I didn't know if...
Oh, you never addressed it?
I never said anything.
Oh. Well, because you know that would crush his ego.
Yeah, I was going to say, listen, I opened up for you in 1996.
Now, if you could do a
now, just
tight,
do a tight 20.
Tight 20. Don't mention anything about relationships and keep the swearing down. It's like, son of a bitch.
You told me this in New York, and it's incredible how you would, when you first... The Comedy Store is what you made your home when you got out of here, right?
Yeah.
And when you're working at the Four Seasons... And this is like a huge testament. And if you are, we have a lot of, you know, up and comers who listen to this, but also a lot of big famous people. Fucking Carrot Top is a big listener.
Sure.
Bill Clinton. Earth, Wind, and Fire. Hall & Oates. Now I'm just listening to bands I really enjoy to listen to on Pandora. But how you would work out in your schedule at work to like meticulously get to the store. Like,
yeah. Four Seasons, for you guys don't know where that is in relation to the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard, it's approximately a mile, maybe 2 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would do is during my break, I would jump in my car, go to the Comedy Store, do the set, get back in the car, and go back to waiting my tables. During that time, though, and this is not like I'm leaving Barney's Beanery. I'm leaving the Four Seasons Hotel, where the people are ordering, you know, nice wine, steaks. I mean, could you imagine going to a nice restaurant and the waiter disappearing for a half an hour?
No.
Yeah. So I would have to tell the guy that was next to me or the girl next to me, listen, this is what's going on with my tables. Watch over the tables. Now, granted, I worked in the lounge and it wasn't a lot of heavy eating, but, you know, people would order appetizers.
They still want to be attended to.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I would do is I would fill up everybody on their drinks before I left. I would start figuring out, okay, 45 minutes, let me get this guy his drink and get him all filled up. And then I would leave. Now, sometimes, you know, there would be a little confusion. The waiter would call me from the Four Seasons, go, 117, what's going on with the table 117? I said, oh, yeah, they got chicken satays coming out. They got spicy tuna rolls. I forgot to tell you. So I'm waiting tables from Sunset and La Siena.
Wow. As you're about to think about the bits you're about to go on stage and deliver.
Well, that was the least of my concern.
Oh, for real? Okay.
The bits were the least of my thing was getting there. Yeah. Let me get there. And I timed it out so perfect where the guy who was working the Comedy Store at the time, his name was Tommy. And I would call him. I go, Tommy, where we're at? 2 minutes. Okay. And then, boom, I would get out of the car. I do my set.
Mm-hmm.
And then race back, and I did that for a good 3 or 4 years.
Holy shit, man. It's so amazing to hear you tell that story, because I know so many comics, male, female, coming up saying, I just don't know if I have the heart for this. I'm not getting my spots.
Or they say, I have this job, I can't do it, because there's no way. I can't. What am I going to do, leave my job?
Yeah, well, listen, you got to eat. Yeah. Right, you got to eat. You got to work.
Sure,
there's no shame in working.
Yeah, none.
Okay, so if the young comedians I used to run into, yeah, work, ain't work. I'll just work as a comedian. It's very hard to sustain any type of lifestyle on comedian pay when you're starting off. There's just really no way to do it.
Unless you can't, because starting pay is nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And when I graduated, I played Wolverine at Universal Studios for 4 years and would do open mics at night. And it was like, sometimes I would show up in the suit and have, you know, it's not true, but I wanted to. But like, same thing, same thing. I was just like, I have to have a job. Like, I can't just try to like, I mean, maybe having that mentality of like, I'll just work as a comedian and all that sort of grind mentality will get me bigger opportunities quicker. But I think, again, like having that work experience, I'm sure you pulled material from the restaurant, right?
Yeah. I mean, just, and I'm not saying everybody's got to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am.
I mean, it's just you have to. For myself, I like nice things.
Yeah,
and I'm not the guy that's gonna go, hey, can I sleep on your couch for a few nights? I ain't doing that.
Yeah,
it's not my style. Right. Nothing wrong with that, but I ain't sleeping here.
All right. Well, it's a great couch. I've slept on it many a time because my room gets hot.
But when I came out here, I just made sure I had enough money to sustain myself.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to work. And, yeah, you can do both. And your point is valid. I mean, you could have a lot of hunger when you don't have a job to pursue comedy, and that might get you an opportunity that you might have not had because you were playing Wolverine. right?
But yeah, but the opportunities I got because of Wolverine.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see that trophy behind me? The guys I met in that basketball league, I played were sure. Captain America and Spider-Man.
Oh, man, yeah. Without that, the trophy's not here. But, like, I look at you doing a schedule like that. I know what happens at the store when an Eddie Griffin pops in, when a Carlos Mencia pops in, and then they do an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then that had to piss you off when you time this out so meticulously, and then an Andrew Dice Clay shows up, does an hour and bumps you.
Yeah. Well, those didn't, thank God they didn't happen a lot. But I know what you're talking about. During that time, they were coming in there and doing.
Sure.
Or hour and a half. Where if that happened, I'd just have to scrap the set and go back to the hotel. It's not like I was waiting an hour and a half to do the set. But my mentality was, listen, I didn't come out here to wait tables. Mm-hmm. I came out here to do stand-up comedy. And I remember at the Comedy Store, there's a comedian by the name of Freddie Soto. He's no longer alive. He did a show there. And what's his name? Mark Anthony happened to be in the audience.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Loved Freddie Soto. Took him on the road. And this was like on a Tuesday night. There was about, I don't know, 40 people there.
Wow.
And I was there that night. I'm like, wow. And it made me realize you never know who's going to be in the audience.
Yeah.
And you could go and you could be plucked out of nowhere. So I'm like, I ain't doing chicken satays and tuna rolls when, you know, somebody could walk in and see me. So that
is one of the benefits of stand-up in L.A., don't you think, too, of like – just being on shows out here, like you, just because the business is so prevalent out here that like there's always somebody, I feel like, in the audience. I mean, I met people after shows, even at like a 12:30 spot on a Tuesday at the store, where that either the guy from, you know, some, I met a guy who was the head of CBS on air promos one night at the store at like 12:50 or something, because he had come to see somebody in the main room and they just popped into the OR, and I was on stage and I talked to him after, got some little meeting and out of it to maybe do those, you know, cut this fall on CBS, all that bullshit, just from that.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and there was a part of me, because it was so late and there was maybe like 15 people that I was like, you know, fucking, I got to get up early. But I was like, no, you got to do it because these are the spots you're getting right now.
Yeah.
And that was early on, and thank God after that that put it in my head of like, oh shit, you always... You got to never not miss a spot, like especially when you get to a point to where you got into the rotation and it's like,
you miss a spot, you miss an opportunity, whether it be, it's not really, it's more for me, it was my material and working on the material.
Yeah.
It's not like I was looking for the next Mark Anthony to come.
Of course.
But
let's real quick, if there could be a musician to pluck you and take you on the road, who would you want it to be?
Frank Sinatra, if he was alive.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the ultimate.
That would be, you know what?
Right?
God, that would be great. There's just nobody like that anymore. I mean,
Bublé?
Clooney? Is he the new Sinatra?
I guess. I think so. Just sort of hands in all the pockets, the swagger. Like, yeah, I guess he's kind of like that. He's got the house in Italy. Yeah.
Your folks love you grew up on Sinatra, yeah?
Yeah, I grew up on a lot of jazz and a lot of like Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, Al Jarreau.
Yeah.
Miles Davis. That's another thing. I was a little bit of an oddball at school. You know, people were like Motley Crue, Def Leppard, and I'm like, anybody hear the new Herbie Hancock?
it's weird because, that's the thing. But I'm sure if some older guy was seeing you right there, he would come up to me like, don't worry, you got it right.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry. Stick with this, kid. Yeah. This is going to get you laid like you would never believe. It seems like your entire life being neat, not embarrassing, hardworking, liking classic jazz, your whole life was designed to get pussy.
You would think, but it didn't really work out for me.
Oh, that ain't true.
With that hair, are you kidding me?
My hair is not that fantastic, okay?
You are very presentable on stage, I must say. The first time I saw you, you had a great, nice, really slim-fitting Gap sweater.
I don't shop at the Gap.
B-Republic?
No, I don't do any of that.
Oh, shit, really?
No, it's the clothes don't fit me well. I'm not...
Poor, you mean? No. Poor things don't fit you well.
No, it's just that I don't know. For whatever reason, I never got into that. I always used to shop at a place called this is growing up. I don't know if you guys had this. Were you guys? A place called Merry Go Round. Ever hear of it? No?
No, that's no. Not, no,
the
that's
TiVo,
not
DJs, any of this?
Wait, merry-go-round. Baccarat. Wait a minute, merry-go-round. Was it like a thrift store almost that had toys and clothes?
No, it was IOU sweatshirts. None of this is ringing a bell.
No.
Cavaricci's, nothing. No.
Brad,
nothing? You don't know what Cavaricci's are?
Gap.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not doing that shit, dude. I
Cavaricci's.
What fits? I'm like, that's it. That's me. And I wish that was a joke. That's literally how I shop. I go into a store and say, what fits? They bring me out three shirts. I pick one. Good. I'm done. Okay.
Brad growing up was borrowing the clothes from his stuffed animals.
Oh, my God. This overall set from my buddy is going to be hot. What's up, eighth grade?
That's funny. But you wait. When did you run into Vince Vaughn and get in the Wild West?
Vince Vaughn, I met here, right down the street at Dublin's.
Yeah. Were you a part of that scene?
No.
Okay.
Tail end.
All right. Okay.
Were you guys there?
No.
No. That was.
But we heard about it.
Yeah. Well, I've heard legendary stories about Dane, Alonzo, and just guys. And even
it was like, a bar show on Sunset Boulevard that was just became the most popular comedy show in town, yeah?
Pretty much, and I wasn't involved in that until kind of the tail end of it. And Ahmed Ahmed and Jay Davis used to run this room, and Ahmed Ahmed at the time was roommates with Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn used to come, watch comedy. I met him in the back of the room once. He's from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. We started talking, and a few months later, got a call from his people to say that he wanted to take four comedians on the road and do this Vince Vaughn Wild West comedy show. And it was a show a night in 30 different cities, and we made a documentary about it, and it aired in theaters, 1,000 theaters across the country.
That was awesome.
I thought, or my father thought too, this is it. This is what we've been waiting for. I'm quitting, quitting cutting hair tomorrow. This is your break.
Dude, I thought that when I guest starred on According to Jim 7 years ago. I was like, here we go. Hey, Belushi, you might want to get me a table place card.
It's funny, man, in this business, what you think is going do something. It's just,
you work so hard to try to get certain opportunities, and you get on a certain show, and you think, all right, this is it. And then some fan puts a YouTube video of you up, and that's what breaks you.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, so I should have just had that happen. Oh, okay.
Yeah, jeez. Unbeknownst to you,
right?
Someone filmed you at the Improv, and now that's got 98 million hits, but your Comedy Central special, nobody knows you even had
it. Well, so, welcome to the world of show business.
What about that whole experience? Because for me, I thought that was so great, because that was the first time I feel like we got to see like comedians off stage that were that were very successful. And I mean, was that... Did you feel some, because, you know, as you mentioned, like you keep, you know, try to keep somewhat private. So was that kind of tough for you to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to let them film me? And
yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't like the cameras walking around. I was like, I don't know, how am I going to behave in front of that?
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah. And you're a guy that when you go on stage, like, you're very well put together. You got your good outfit, your good hair, good everything. And now they got a camera with you on the bus where you're kind of like, hey, this is not me.
At first it was a little intrusive, but after a while I was like, okay, this is kind of just the way this environment's going to work. And, so this thing came out in the theaters, and, my father in Chicago went to go see it, and he calls me from the theater and goes, there's a problem. I'm the only one in the theater.
Oh, God.
Who's in charge of the marketing on this?
Oh, Jesus. He's like, let me talk to this Vince Vaughn guy.
Yeah, it was bad, man. I mean, no one went to go see the damn movie.
Wow.
So it was
on one of those discount racks next to like the 3-pack of Schwarzenegger movies.
Yeah, I mean, you could have found it on a DVD at the Tower Records. So yeah.
Great call.
But
Rest in peace, Tower Records, by the way.
Yeah, no shit. Respect.
another thing to have the map for, but Dubai Comedy Festival, Lebanon's Music Hall solidified him as an international sensation.
Oh, yeah, no, isn't that amazing how we worded that?
Did you send him that bio, or did that?
Yeah.
Come on, listen, you read these bios. The bio is coming from either the comedian or a manager working with the comedian to make it sound like it's unbelievable what this guy's doing. The, what does that say? I even forgot what it was. What it is was, it? Lebanon what?
Brad, read it.
His sold-out shows at the Dubai Comedy Festival and Lebanon's Music Hall have solidified him as an international sensation.
That's what they used to describe Enrique Iglesias when he first hit the scene.
It's like Sebastian Bailamos. Yeah. Same thing.
See, this is what you do. In relation to this particular blurb in the bio, there were sold-out shows in Dubai.
Cool.
Okay. Was I a part of the show? Absolutely.
Great.
Were there six or seven other comedians on that show? Yes.
Okay.
But they don't need to know that. Stretching the truth a little bit.
Right? Yeah. It's like, I mean, yeah, when I was, I think, like 3 months into comedy, I was doing a show and Chris Rock was hosting the Oscars, and he stopped by the show that I happened to be on and did a set just for like the 12 people that were in the audience.
The next night.
Oh, the next night.
Williams. He's open for Chris Rock.
Wow.
But it's amazing what we latch on to.
Well, you have to.
Because I had nothing. Yeah. I had nothing at that point. You can't say, he's worked Jose's Taco Shop on Paramount. Like, that's not exactly something that's going to get headlines.
You're right, man. You got to latch on to whatever is happening at the moment. By the way, new bio coming out next week.
That part's going to be deleted.
That's gone. Sensation, Dubai, Lebanon, it's out.
And I want to tell this story for people that are unfamiliar with the comedy, because you're one of my favorite comics to watch, and I'm not bullshitting you.
No, thanks.
I was at the Laugh Factory one night, and the comic before you went on Kill. I forgot who it was, but it was like one of those nights where it just wrecked the room. And then they said, oh, Sebastian's up next, and the comic before you was very high energy, and you're kind of low energy on stage, and me, like a dumb shit, doubted you and went, oh my god, the guy's high energy, Sebastian's low, this is not going to work out. You went up there and you were you, and you got the audience to go to your pace, and then you fucking killed harder than the guy who killed before you, and it was unbelievable for me to watch, and it taught me something. Just to be like, you know who you are. You didn't try to fake it, mm-hmm. And you just went up on stage and you did you, and it was perfect. So I just want to say I always enjoy watching you.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, you can't fake. Like, what are you gonna do? Go on stage because somebody was bouncing off the wall, and what, you're gonna bounce off the wall?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to bounce off the wall. That's just really not what I do.
Right.
So why would you adjust your act because of the guy before or after you? I just never understood that.
So you came to terms with that early on, because I feel like that is something you could easily go up and not have the awareness to.
Well, I mean, the people are going to see right through it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you went up there and you started doing, like, hey,
they're it's like, not authentic.
This is not good. Yeah.
So. And you were always kind of aware of that, just like, I know, like, when did you feel that you sort of figured out your character, your voice on stage?
Well,
to be
first,
James Lipton-y, when did Sebastian really know who Sebastian was? What's your favorite curse word? What is your favorite curse word?
I guess. It would have to be mine.
That's just
a good answer.
I think that's everybody's.
It is.
It's so versatile.
Yeah, it's just you could throw that in anywhere.
Yeah, it's a compliment. It's an insult. It's great.
Yeah.
Do you curse much in your everyday life?
I wish I would curb my cursing a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes I use it, and then I even catch myself. I'm like, yeah, I got to stop swearing. And my wife doesn't swear at all.
Oh, really?
Very rarely. Mm. So being around her, you know.
It's kind of exciting when she does. She's got to be really fired up about something.
Actually, you know, I tell her, you know, I don't like when you swear. It's very, she's, oh, man.
It's unladylike.
It's unladylike.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what were we saying?
When you've done the Tonight Show a handful of times. No, but this actually ties in. But because obviously I'm starting off, two people always say, don't curse, don't be dirty, right? Because it's easy to go that way. And it's always about, like, you're not going to get on TV with that. And you're not going to get on a late night set. And so when you're doing the, because I don't consider anything you do filthy, but like you accent things with some cursing here and there, right?
Yes.
But you could easily not do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And have you always... I mean, did you have somebody tell you early on, like, hey, maybe take out some of that and your bits are strong enough for that?
No, nobody told me that. It was just something that I was aware of.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to work corporate gigs.
Oh, shit.
And the corporations, I noticed early on, were looking for clean acts. And I figured, if I could work the corporate gigs, I don't have to work at the Four Seasons that much.
Oh, shit.
So I really was cautious. Because in comedy today, there are not a lot of guys to work clean. I mean, it's just...
It's like Brian Regan, Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, those are pretty much the guys that work clean. So if you could work clean, your opportunity to work kind of increases because now, and especially these corporate gigs, are so in and out. You guys know, one night in and out.
You do a lot of them?
Over the years, it's been good to me.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm not working the... you know who was a corporate? Danny Gans.
Yes.
In Las Vegas, who's passed away.
Yeah, right.
Used to make a shit ton of money doing corporate gigs. And I'm like, gosh, that's the way to go. I mean, that's literally the way to go.
And still great audiences, right? These are still people that want to laugh.
Yeah. It's one night. You make a nice check. And you don't have to deliver tuna rolls for a couple of weeks.
Who are some of the corporations, can you even say?
Yeah. Early on, I used to work for this company called, God, what was her name?
We can say them. Dairy Queen? They were pretty big.
No. Nobody would know anyway if I would have said it. But some of the big ones would be, God. Here, I used to, and I still do, and I'm working for them again in February. I was working for this company. They're a building company out of Chicago. And here, the guy saw me on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
There you go.
And he's like, you know, we having a Christmas party, so boom. They hire big acts. The first one I did was in the Bahamas, and the act was Lionel Richie.
Holy
after me.
Shit.
After
brought
you.
In,
holy
in
shit.
Lionel Richie.
That's incredible.
This is nice.
Yeah, you're in the Bahamas.
I did. Yeah. 30, Lionel comes up, and we're dancing on the scene.
I mean, oh, that's incredible.
Don't you love moments like that where you just sit back and go, wow, I'm being paid right now, technically.
Yeah.
It's insane.
I'm watching all night long with people looking at me being like, you were fucking great too. Like they're enjoying the song but enjoying your presence.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I've been working with this company for the last 4 years, and the acts that they brought in were... After that was Foreigner.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, shit.
And then after that was Bon Jovi.
Oh.
But just Bon Jovi, not his band. He's got like
not
a
Jovi.
Separate band.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Joe, just Bon.
not quite as popular, but still incredible head of hair.
Oh, does he have amazing hair.
He does, doesn't he?
That guy's got a nice...
He still rocks it too, doesn't he? All those guys did.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in with a different band.
Mm-hmm.
And he played, this was in Las Vegas, and I was like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Watching Bon Jovi right now.
And getting
private. Yeah. It's a private show.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
So.
And you're the type of comic where you do the corporate shows, you do the touring, you do the theaters, and you also do a bunch of USO tours as well?
Yeah. Me and actually Byrne. Steve Byrne.
Yeah, I had him on recently.
He had come up to me and Sam Tripoli. We did a little Asian gig, going to Japan, Guam.
Oh my God!
Real war stricken areas.
Yeah,
not a lot of.
You were right. You're right there in the shit.
Right. Yeah. Well, the USO. I don't know if you've ever done the USO tour.
He has. Yeah, I've done. Yeah, I've done a bunch of tours over the Middle East and stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And
so you went
Japan
into,
too.
So you went into like,
yeah. I went to the stuff where they're like, all right, we're in a plane right now, but we have to do something called a combat landing where we don't just slowly glide to the runway. We go in a dive, almost a complete vertical dive straight down. And then right before we hit the runway, we pull up. Why do we have to do this shit? We get hit with RPGs every now and then.
This is in a plane?
Yeah, it's in a plane.
Wow.
That was a NyQuil dream Brad had a couple weeks ago.
It's still pretty solid. But like my experiences with the USO is those audiences, they're just so thankful you're there.
Oh, great. Great guys. Yeah. I mean, we're going to these like remote areas. One show we did was just like in a little restaurant that they had on the on the thing. And, 40 guys came out. Had a blast.
Yeah.
But, man, I got to commend you going into those. I mean, I have a bad stomach.
Me too. Roller coasters. Can't do them then, huh?
Can't do it. Never.
Finally,
never.
Dude. Finally.
Wow. You guys can bond over this.
Yeah.
That and hair.
That and hair.
I got a lot of things, Brad.
Roller coaster fucks up the hair.
The stomach thing is just a decoy.
Yeah. It's actually for that.
But I couldn't do that. I couldn't drop from an airplane. Fuck and come in no. Like the helicopters up and down. For, yeah, that's yeah.
Tower of Terror at Disneyland fucks me up. There's no way I could do a
tower.
Drop.
Tower of Afghanistan. Yeah. No,
that's too soon. What was that tour in Japan like? Though, like, what are those?
It was great. We had a great time. We went for about 10 days.
Did you karaoke?
No. I had some nice sushi, though. Really nice.
You love your sushi.
Love sushi, man.
Favorite thing in the world?
Well, Italian food is tops, but yeah. I mean, me and my wife, that's all we do is sushi.
For real?
Yeah, once a week, at least once a week.
Well done, sir. I'm with you on that one.
Isn't it nice? The first sushi I had when I came out here, I don't know if you guys remember this restaurant. Miyagi's?
Yeah, dude.
Oh,
I loved it.
Yes.
Which is now Pink Taco.
Yeah.
Or Taco weird. Tuesdays or whatever.
It's like, all right, there's the place in L.A. where I cut my chops doing stand-up before you...
Did you guys perform there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I loved it.
Yeah. It was cool. It was a cool room.
It was
with
a cool
the bridge.
Room. Yes.
Yeah.
The
bridge. Yeah. It's always weird when they say, and now come to the stage, Brad Williams, and you have to walk through the crowd over a bridge over the river to get on stage.
Answer a riddle from a troll. Yeah. And then try to get some punchlines out.
Yeah.
That spot was... Why did that stop?
Is Pink Taco making it?
I don't know.
Have you been in there?
Yeah, it's fratty enough, man. There's enough people that like...
I never see anybody in there.
Jay was running a show there.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, and it was actually packed. And then, because, you know, Jay does it. But, I think it's... The location is just so prime, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think...
just right on Sunset. People looking for an experience. They look up, see Pink Taco. They're like, there's going to be cool shit in there.
Yeah, but I never see anybody like Miyagi's, that patio area when it first opened.
Yeah.
Like, this place is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like
packed.
That and right next to Saddle Ranch. So you would just like, you go to Miyagi's, see the scene there, do a set, walk over to Saddle Ranch. Like that, like.
Ride the bull.
Well, that's what I did. Because I don't know if you've ever seen a dwarf ride a fucking bull. But I could shut Saddle Ranch down. Like, it'd be like everyone would be drinking. There'd be mystery, one of those pickup artists over there trying to spit game on a chick. And then you see a midget ride a bull. It's over. It's over, dude.
Oh, man. I would have loved to seen you ride the bull.
That's a great aren't you embarrassed moment, right?
No, hell no.
No, that's not an aren't you embarrassed. That's like, what a man.
I mean, yeah, sure, my forefathers rode actual bulls, but fuck it. I'll have an apple teeny and hop on something mechanical.
Jesus, what does that mean?
I guess if you isolate that statement and not realize I'm talking about a mechanical bull, my sexuality might be questioned, but whatever. I'm good with that. I'm confident.
Oh, man.
All right, so the special, November 14th.
November 14th, Showtime special. It's Aren't You Embarrassed. It was filmed in my hometown of Chicago at the Harris Theater.
That's a big deal.
That was a huge deal for me coming back home, seeing my family, my friends, everybody I grew up with, and performing really where, you know, right outside. I used to go on field trips to, you know, Buckingham Fountain, or not, what was it? Is it Buckingham Fountain?
Buca de Beppo. You're getting your
Buca de Beppo Buckingham Fountain.
I just hear Chicago. I think Wrigley Fountain. Yeah, sure.
Real quick though, as a big Italian eater, where does Buca de Beppo rank amongst you people?
I don't even. It's like an Olive Garden.
Is it?
Yeah. In my eyes.
But what do you rank higher? They're all in the same.
Right here, Mozza.
Yeah.
Il Piccolino on Robertson.
Yeah.
Phenomenal veal Milanese.
Okay.
Just went to Dantana's the other night. It's all right, but I mean, if I have to go Italian, I'm going to Il Piccolino in Los Angeles.
Perfect. I would love to go there sometime.
Yeah, and
that was Adam's way of asking you out, Sebastian. I don't know if you were getting the signs. Yeah. But,
no, I haven't.
He lit candles. He wants a nice Italian dinner.
Fuck off.
He shows off his trophy.
What does Buca di Beppo mean in Italian?
Small people. I have no idea. I have no idea.
I'm a Buca di Beppo.
Hilarious.
I have a new term for myself. Yeah, it's fucking amazing.
It sounds like you're talking about it like, you know, Buca di Beppo.
He's a little Buca di Beppo. You know what? I'm going to say that and I'm going to sell the shit out of it and people are going to believe it.
Yeah, just that's your new nickname.
Yeah.
Buca di Beppo.
Yeah. Wikipedia will start using that in your blurbs.
Brad Williams is the Buca di Beppo of comedy. That's going on my bio. International sensation, Buca di Beppo.
But that is a big deal to see places you went to as a kid and now you're performing right in that same area.
Yeah, no, it was great. And
did you get emotional?
No. I got emotional at the Vince Vaughn tour at the end of the movie. I cried because I had to go back to waiting tables. I got emotional there. But when I came back, no, I was more. It was just more pumped. Of a happy. It was more of a happy thing, more of a relief that it was over. By the way, I'm also going to be on Fallon November 14th.
Oh, so shit.
A little double plug.
That's a great fucking night.
Good night. Little Sebastian all over the map. We got NBC and Showtime.
Well done, sir.
That's incredible.
Thank you, sir. So I'm excited.
And if for any reason you don't have Showtime, you do have a special on Netflix as well, right?
Yeah, that's what's wrong with people. That was the Showtime special 2 years ago.
Highly recommend getting that.
Yeah.
And you're on the road a lot. Right?
Yeah, I'll be in Phoenix this week, Tampa over the week before Thanksgiving, and then New York City to round it out, Gotham Comedy Club, December 11th through the 14th. And
my hair will not be there, but Sebastian will be. So
and disappointing that
his hair and Sebastian's hair is worth the trip.
Yeah, it's secondary to Ray's, but
or Leno's. God, you must have had a tough time not staring at that while you're performing. He's just looking at you, being like, "I know you want to look at it. I know you're trying to do your thing, but I got some gray hair on top of my head, and I know it's giving you trouble doing your joke."
Yeah, he's got another great.
And then, are you on the Twitter as well?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter.
How fucking old are you? Are you on the Twitter as well?
Hey, mister, are you on the Twitter?
But are you big with this? We were just talking to Paulie about this, about how the social media, like, is... Do you feel it as a burden now? Or are you like, it's a part of what you got to do?
It's part of the business. Yeah. I'm not cranking out, like, really clever tweets. I hook up my Instagram to my Twitter, and that, you know, it all kind of goes together. My thing is, I didn't know what to do with it at first. I'm like... Where do I live in this space? Where do I live on Instagram and Twitter? I'm not the type of guy that, you know, is a writer that's going to write these jokes on Twitter. Right. I'm more of like a guy who likes to perform and gives, you know, facial expressions. So it took me a while to find out what my little niche was on this thing. And it happens to be now this Aren't You Embarrassed videos. So, yes, I'm on the Twitter, Sebastian Comedy, as well as Instagram, Facebook.
And, well, certainly our listeners should... Look you up. You're one of my favorite comics to watch. You always have something new, and I always learn something from you. Whether it be a facial expression or how to emphasize a certain word, you're one of the best damn performers in the business.
Oh, that's very sweet of you to say. And what the hell was I going
to
tell you?
Yeah, a lot of pressure for you to say like some closing statement.
I wanted to share a story here.
I
don't know if I shared this with you in person, but I need to share it with you here.
Okay.
6 years ago, I went on a pitch meeting.
All right.
And I'm in the pitch meeting, and I forgot what I was even pitching. I think it was like somewhat of like a travel show.
Okay.
And you were in the room before me, unbeknownst to me.
Okay.
And they're like, I just had Brad in here, and he's really funny, and he
has the best work at a Beppo we've ever seen.
This had to be you. This had to be you. And he's like, he's got a girlfriend who's a little person.
Yeah.
And he's got a girlfriend who's like grown.
Cake size.
This was you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I remember this pitch.
They both know each other.
Yeah.
And like,
what? I was pimping at one point.
Yeah. And
what was the name of the show?
Do you have anything like that? What?
What the fuck?
Like, they
do you
so,
have anything like that?
Well, like, it was so. Because like, they're like, is your wife going to be, or your girlfriend going to be involved? Like, no, it's not. My girlfriend's not going to be. I don't do that. Like, my girlfriend's got her own career.
Yeah.
She's doing that. But it's like, now he had like everybody involved, the girlfriend. I go, I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, so when they said, do you have anything like that? Were they like, so can you date like a dwarf chick?
You want to start dating dwarfs? I'm like, what?
We've actually got the poster already made for the show.
For if you don't want to put this on, you could cut this out.
No, it's fine. It's funny.
But you did pitch a show with like your girlfriends in it.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. It was like a Playboy.
By the way,
Girls Next Door with like midgets.
Sebastian's Facebook. You did fuck up my meeting, right? That was you that set me up for the on deck circle.
I had to go back to the drawing board. I'm boring.
I'm not dating a midget and a 6 foot tall female comedian.
And they knew about each other.
Yeah, they knew.
Oh, man.
Don't ask me how I pulled it off. I still don't know.
But I will ask you why that show didn't happen.
Talk to the executives that turned it down. It was all good to go. We got the pilot made, and then the story has happened 1,000 times. Some guy gets fired. Some new guy gets brought in, sees that, and goes, "What a midget banging 2 chicks at once! I don't want that shit on my TV." And that show never happened. So, oh well.
Buried me.
Well, now that I know, I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I've held you back all these years.
Don't be sorry for having a fabulous life. I'm pitching a travel show where I taste pizza in Chicago, and this guy's going, "Listen, I got a whole harem on Dayton."
fucking perfect, man. Wow. Well, Sebastian, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Dude, you're the best.
Thanks.
Special November 14th, Showtime. Fallon.
Pete Corielli will kill me if I don't.
Love Pete Corielli.
Yeah, we have a podcast together.
Oh, there you go.
And it's on the Riotcast
yeah.
with Robert Kelly and... Mm-hmm. Nick DiPaolo.
It's great. Guys.
And those are all heavy hitters, just monsters of comedy.
Yeah.
Yo,
are
you good? You're really good friends with Pete.
Yeah, yeah. I met Pete doing a Canadian tour.
Oh, my. All right. You got to ask Pete. Dude, he was one of the first guys I met in New York. A solid dude.
Solid.
It makes perfect sense that you guys are buds.
Solid guy. And we're really opposite. We're similar, but very opposite. And that's where kind of our show kind of works because. You know, he's a beer and shot type of guy.
Yeah.
I like to have like a Cabernet, charcuterie plate every now and then.
Charcuterie plate.
So,
just that vocabulary is beyond me. So, what is the name of the podcast?
It's called The Pete and Sebastian Show.
Nice.
So,
there you go.
But I'd like to thank your listeners for listening, and thank you guys for having me.
No problem. Please. Check out the podcast. Check out the special. Check him out on Fallon. Sebastian, thank you so much
for
coming.
And if you see him in L.A., check him out on a scooter.
I'll be on my scooter. I hope it's still there.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know.
But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that
Brad Williams and Adam
Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.